You are listening to Blessed and Bossed Up, presented by Anchored Media, an entrepreneurship podcast for Christians all about how to make God the CEO of your business. Get ready to be inspired, challenged, but well-equipped to live and build your destiny His way. Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the Blessed and Bossed Up podcast. Today we are continuing on with our book club pick, The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. We're actually going to close out this book in the next few episodes. This book, we're in part three, where we are talking about the principles on how to live an unhurried life. We've diagnosed the problem. We understand fully why we need to stop being in a rush. So now we're at the how. Last week, we talked about silence and solitude, and I have a testimony I'm going to share in a second about that. Today's episode, we're going to be talking about the Sabbath. We don't hear about the Sabbath often in Christian spaces these days. And so I'm excited for us to dive deep into that and have that very necessary conversation. But before we get there, I want to remind you guys that I'm moving. And with that, as I've been packing up my home, I'm going through the garage and I have boxes on boxes of physical resources that I've created for women like you. My books, my journals, my planners. I don't want these things to sit in a storage unit, you guys. And I don't want to call the recycling folks to come in for me to throw them away. I want these products that I have left to get in the hands of the women that the Lord led me to create them for. So here's what I'm doing. I'm selling everything for only $5. These are products that have been sold for 20, 30, 50, 60 bucks when they were first created. But I'm selling everything for just $5 plus shipping. Shipping will still keep your total order under 10 bucks. That's it. Here's what I have available. First, I have the God is My CEO, a prayer journal for entrepreneurs. This is a beautiful limited edition version, gold spiral binding, hardcover, full cover printing. There are tabbed sections and pockets, so many different necessary sections for any Christian entrepreneur. I'm going to put a link in the show notes where I did a walkthrough so you can see exactly what it looks like. I also have the podcast planner. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, I have been doing this for over 9 years now. I've helped over 150 people launch, grow, and monetize their show. And everything that I teach is within the pages of that planner. And it is a physical planner, a physical product that you could use to actually write and take notes in. I also did a video walkthrough of that one, and I'll put the link in the show notes to that as well. Third is my book, my last book, She is Uncompromising. This book is for any woman who wears multiple hats and you're struggling with how do I do it all? How do I have this total life harmony that I keep hearing Tatum talk about? Grab this book. It's in the show notes. And then fourth, I found some more of my Business Meetings with God devotional. It's a 90-day devotional, again, for Christian entrepreneurs. This one comes with access to two bonus masterclasses. One when I teach how to have a business meeting with God, and the second with a time management class from my girl, Rosalyn, who's a friend to the show. And also, I didn't mention in my She is Uncompromising book, when you purchase a book, you also get access to a masterclass that I did as well. Everything's first come, first served. I got inventory that is updated on the website. And once it is gone, praise the Lord, these things are gone. The books will still be available on like Amazon and things like that. Those come from a separate warehouse. But the planner, the prayer journal, those are limited edition products that I have on hand. And then once they're gone, they're gone. The last thing that I want to emphasize, if you are connected to a church, a women's ministry, a small group, a sorority, a community organization, anybody, I want to talk to you because I'm sending bulk orders. I want to bless communities of women who want to utilize these books and prayer journals as tools to help you grow together closer to the Lord. So here's how I have it set up. If your order has over 10 of the products, the order is going to be free. All you're going to pay for is shipping. I want to bless specifically community of women even more by just giving you the products for free. I just ask that you cover shipping. That's it. There's nothing extra that you have to do. If you order more than 10, the cart will automatically update to your order being zero, and then you just paying for shipping. And again, shipping is pretty reasonable. So shipping won't even be, unless you're international, shipping shouldn't be that high. So that's it for my announcement on products. Thank you for everybody who has purchased products so far. I mean, some of y'all were buying like 4 or 5 different products. Thank you. All of those orders have gone out already. There might be a little delay with like the holiday, but the orders are with the post office. You should have already gotten an email with tracking. If you have any questions, you can always email me, Tatum@TatumTamia.com. And the link to purchase any of the products is in the show notes. All right. Testimony. Remember last week we talked about the importance of, or earlier this week, we talked about the importance of silence and solitude. And in living out everything that we discussed, I had a really beautiful moment with the Lord this past week. I told y'all that I was slowing down, and because I just wanted to get close to Him just for me. Not to produce anything, not to pour out to anybody else, but I just wanted to sit as God's daughter. And so I find myself, now that I'm done with this semester of school, things are back to more of like my normal life without law school, you know, still busy with like business and family and stuff, but just the rhythm is more regular than like this huge undertaking with school being put on top of it. And I found myself kind of detoxing a little bit from that pace. I mean, my pace is crazy with school. I'm up at 4 a.m. I'm studying, and then I get help the kids get ready, get myself ready for school, get them out the house. Then I have an hour and a half commute to school. Then I'm in class all day. Then I stay and study a little bit. Then I have an hour and a half commute home, cook dinner, go to sleep, start over again the next day. It's a lot, and it add in extra studying and all the other stuff on top of that. So there's just this pace that I've been used to with school. And so now having this break, I've almost felt like I had to detox, and I slowly come back to myself. Like my husband says, after exams, it takes me like a week to realize exactly where I'm at any given moment, but it's true. And so this past week, as I've been really committing to even more time with the Lord, I found myself not really knowing what to pray. And it's kind of strange because, of course, I have all the things that I want to talk to God about, or I have like my pain points and areas that I want to hear from Him in. But again, I'm in this period of slowing down, not to get anything from God, but just to exist closer to Him. And all of the things that I have to bring up are not news to Him. So I just was choosing not to come and petition in this moment. So I'm like, okay, I can't even fully wrap my mind around what to even say or pray outside of like my needs. And so I had went to my daughter's room, and I just laid on the floor on my face, and I just started speaking in tongues. And so what happens with me when I'm speaking in tongues, a lot of times I don't know what I'm saying out my mouth, of course, but what I hear in my mind is almost as if I'm interpreting my tongues. It's hard to explain, and it may sound a little funny, but it's my experience. So I'm doing all the raw ta-tas out my mouth, but then in my head, I'm hearing what it is that I'm praying. And so as I'm doing this, just speaking in tongues, and then interpreting my tongue, y'all, I just started bawling. This sounds so crazy. I just started bawling, crying my eyes out. But what I was hearing, it just boils down to a girl who wanted the presence of her father. Like how my kids would just come and they just want to lay up under me, or they want to lay up under my husband. They just want the presence, the comfort, the love of their parent at any given time for whatever reason. And that's where I was. And it was as if my heart was just crying out to just be close to my father. All of the baggage, the weight that I may carry on a day to day, the things that are on my mind, the responsibilities that I feel, all of the walls that I may have built up as I go out into the world and do whatever, all of it just came crashing down. And I just wanted to be close to my father. And I just bawled my eyes out. And without me not saying any word in English, the Lord just ministered to my heart and restored me in that moment in a way that is just so beautiful. And I can't fully articulate because it's something that you just have to experience. And I'm grateful for us reading this book together because it's not just something that we're reading because it sounds good or because it's something you could share or tweet about or talk to your homegirls about. But if we actually apply the things that we're learning and we allow these things that are ministering us to then allow us to take that next step of implementing it, we, I believe, will experience a level of closeness to the Lord that our soul longs for. My soul longed for almost like a hug from my father. And by me just prioritizing that silence and that solitude, even when I didn't even know what to say, I still was so wrapped up in hurry, I didn't even have the words to articulate what to say to God. I didn't have the language. And as eloquent or as good of a communicator as I can be, I wasn't in that moment and I didn't have to be. He knew what my soul needed and he restored me in that moment. And it was beautiful. And even outside of that time, as I just continued to be spending my silence and solitude, quiet time, some revelations that I've gotten that is especially important for entrepreneurs, and I'll probably incorporate this into maybe a full episode or maybe a masterclass or whatever, but this is just me sharing the raw revelation with you because I think that this is a point that is going to be meaningful for a lot of you as Christian entrepreneurs. I've been doing this for quite some time, doing business the Lord's way, making God the CEO of my business. This is something I've been doing for a minute, at least 9 years, however long this show comes out. The show is kind of like a marker for that transition for me. So let's say 9 years I've been doing business God's way. And in a way, I've gotten used to it, right? I'm used to going and fasting and praying and sitting with the Lord on behalf of my business and him giving me the plan. And I come out of the prayer and I execute the plan and I see the plan be successful. I see the fruit of it. I see the lives change. I see the profit margins increase and the money and the revenue and all of that. And then we go back and we just continue to do it. I this working relationship that I have with the Lord is one that I'm used to, and not used to in a sense of where I'm complacent, but there's a rhythm and a flow to doing business God's way. And it's something that is like muscle memory to me at this point because we've been doing it for so long. But one thing that I realized, because I was trying to figure out, like, why do I feel like this closeness with God just as his daughter is an area that I feel kind of, I felt deficit. And I couldn't figure it out because I haven't been in sin. I haven't gone away from the Lord. I'm still following him and allowing him to order my steps. But there, that crying out that I had, there was a void that was there. And so what I realized is similarly to if you work with a spouse, if any of you have worked with a spouse or family in business, you get used to y'all working relationship, but if you don't tend to the personal relationship and the closeness, that could suffer. You could still do good work together, but your closeness and connection and your intimacy with them as just people can suffer if you don't pour into that. This episode is brought to you by IXL. The final stretch of the school year is here. With projects, report cards, end-of-the-year milestones approaching, IXL helps kids stay focused, confident, and ready to finish strong. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning,
Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts. From pre-K through 12th grade, with personalized interactive content that adapts to each child's level and pace, it's an easy way to support learning now, through summer, and into next school year. Y'all know, we've said it month after month, I am an IXL girl. We use it every single day in my house. Right now, my kindergartner is getting ready for a new standardized test, and their testing software that his school used actually integrates with IXL. And so he's able to use IXL for his specific level to get him ready for his upcoming exams. IXL is proven to improve grades. Studies show that kids who use IXL score higher on tests, and that's actually proven in all 50 states. It saves you time and money. One subscription covers everything, pre-K through 12th grade for all the kids in your home. Make an impact on your child's learning and get IXL now. And Blessed and Bossed Up listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/today. Visit IXL.com/today to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price. This episode is brought to you by NetSuite. In today's age, we know that AI is something we cannot get away from. So as a business owner, it's important to ask the question, how can I make AI work for me? Well, the possibilities are endless, but guessing is way too risky. With NetSuite by Oracle, you can put AI to work in your business today. NetSuite is the number one AI cloud ERP, trusted by over 43,000 businesses. It's a unified suite that brings your financials, inventory, commerce, HR, and CRM into a single source of truth. That connected data is what makes your AI smarter. So it doesn't just guess, it knows. It intelligently automates your routine tasks. It delivers actionable insights, helps you cut costs, and make fast AI-powered decisions with confidence, and you've got total flexibility. From software and IT services to healthcare, equipment manufacturing, financial services, and so many other great American industries, NetSuite delivers a customized solution for your business. This isn't another bolted-on tool. It's AI built into the systems that runs your business. Whether your company earns millions or even hundreds of millions, NetSuite can help you stay ahead of the pack. If I needed this product, this is exactly what I would use. If your revenues are at least in the seven figures, get our free business guide, Demystifying AI, at netsuite.com/blessed. The guide is free for you at netsuite.com/blessed. netsuite.com/blessed.
This episode is brought to you by super.com. You know that feeling when your credit score quietly gets in the way? A declined card, a loan that costs way more than it should. It's frustrating. And for a lot of people, the problem isn't that they're bad with money, it's that the system just isn't giving them credit for what they're already doing. That's why I want to talk about Super.com's credit building program. With Super Plus membership, you get access to the Super.com card. And here's the part that I love. It gives you a $5,000 credit usage boost. This isn't money that you spend. It's reported to the bureaus as available credit that you're not using, which can lower your utilization ratio and move your score in the right direction. You can also report your on-time rent payments, including up to 2 years of past rent, to all three major credit bureaus, TransUnion, Experian, and Equifax. The biggest bill that you pay every month can finally start working for you. No hard credit checks to apply, 0% APR, and you can track your progress right inside the app. Start building your credit the easy way. Go to super.com/credit right now to see how Super Plus can help you boost your credit score. That's super.com/credit. Credit building features are only available to the Super Plus members. Impact on your credit score may vary. Super.com cannot control factors outside of their services that may impact your credit. Visit super.com for more details. And so for me, what I found is I've gotten used to the rhythm of working with the Lord that me just being with God as his daughter has lacked. And I'm feeling the effects of that. And I'm like, man, that is such a good point. because a lot of Christian entrepreneurs, you're in that space of, well, how do I know if it's a God idea versus a me idea? How do I know how to make God the CEO of my business? How do I know how to do business God's way? A lot of folks are in that beginning stages of trying to reconcile Christian entrepreneurship versus worldly entrepreneurship. But as a veteran in this, I want to also give you wisdom from this side of the journey to say, hey, while you're doing that, and I have plenty of resources from this podcast, for them journals I told y'all about, my YouTube channel, so many different resources to teach you that rhythm and flow. But do not forget this. Make sure that as you are building with the Lord, you're also cultivating your closeness of just being His daughter. As you're growing in ministry, as you're growing and doing works for the Lord, do not neglect pouring in that personal relationship. It's necessary. It's necessary to restore you, to build you up, and to give you the comfort, the peace, the confidence, and all the things, the wholeness. He makes you whole in that space. He heals you in that space. It's a necessary part to the journey. And I was reminded of that in my quiet time this week. So I wanted to just bring that here. And I think that's a great way for us to go into today's chapter about the Sabbath. Because really taking seriously what the author is talking about with the Sabbath is going to make sure that you're doing just that. The author opens up this chapter talking about desire. He says, what would it take to feel satisfied? What will satisfy our desire? The answer is this: everything. We will have to experience everything and everybody and be experienced by everything and everybody to feel satisfied. We would eat at every restaurant, travel to every country, every city, experience every natural wonder, make love to every partner we could possibly desire, win every award, climb to the top of every field, own every item in the world, etc. We will have to experience it all to ever feel, okay, that's enough. Sadly, even if we had access to unlimited funds, time, and space, still have a pesky way of getting in the way. He says, the reality is that desire is infinite. It has no limit, no point at which it is ever satisfied. The problem is we are finite. We have all sorts of limits, remember? So the result of that desire in our limited nature is restlessness. He says, we live with chronically unsatisfied desires, like an itch that no matter how many times you scratch, doesn't go away. No matter how much we see, do, buy, sell, eat, drink, experience, visit, we always want more. The question for us as apprentices of Jesus, or really as humans, is simple. What do we do with all of this pent up, unsatisfied desire, the restlessness? The Jesus tradition will offer this. Human desire is infinite because we were made to live with God forever in His world, and nothing less will ever satisfy us. So our only hope is to put desire back in its proper place on God, and to put all of our desires in their proper place below God. Not to detach from all desire, as in Stoicism or Buddhism, but to come to the place where we no longer need blank to live a happy, restful life. This is so important for us as entrepreneurs to always have in check, our desire for success. This is why I always say that the first lesson the Lord gave me when I came to Him, gave my life to Him, and wanted to do business His way, was I had to redefine success from what I wanted, which was things, money, all of what was on my vision board. And I had to redefine it from that to pleasing God. And that's it. And I had to be comfortable with that. And not just the lip service, but I had to, in my heart, be satisfied with my desire simply being pleasing the Lord. And that's it. And like the author said, it's not that the ambition goes away, it's that the ambition is just kept in check. And this is something that isn't done one time. This is something that has to get done continuously, and why we have to be self-aware enough to know when our definition of success or our goals and our ambition are starting to get above God, so that we can reel ourselves back in, repent, and then put it back in its rightful place. perfect example of something that came out of my quiet time this week. I've been thinking a lot about my YouTube channel. There's a lot that I want to do and a lot that I want to discuss, especially as I've been putting together these orders to ship out. I was looking at She Is Uncompromising, my book, and thinking about where I was when I wrote that book. I wrote that book in 2021 after I had my first son. That's when I wrote it. And then it came out, I want to say, I don't know if I was pregnant with my middle son yet or not, but it came out like a year after that. So yeah, probably not. It came out like a year after that. And I was thinking about how as women who are ambitious, once we start having children, I feel like the first place that we get to is like this clash, this identity clash of so far we have focused on building, whether it's our careers, our businesses, we've been focused on our ambition is some type of achievement. But then when you decide to start your family and you have your first child, now there's this new responsibility and you're trying to reconcile, like, where does this fit and how does this all work together in the grand scheme of where I don't lose myself, but I also honor this new role that the Lord has given me. And a lot of times we deal with those emotions of we feel less bossy, for lack of a better word, less driven when we are in or focusing on motherhood. I think that's a reality of the emotions that we feel sometimes. And so there's this like identity crisis I feel happens when you have your first kid. And I feel like as you grow in motherhood, as you have more children, or even as your child gets older, you start to blossom into a new identity to where a lot of the things that mattered prior to this phase of life just don't really matter as much anymore. If I think about where I was before I had kids, I wanted to have a $1 million business was the next step. I had already done the first 6 figures. I already did a few more after that. The next step was for my business, at least, to have a 7-figure business. And so when I had my first son, it was like, great, the Lord has blessed me with him after my fertility challenges. He gave me this beautiful baby boy. I'm going to honor that. And I'm also, though, we still want to get these M's. That's where I was. And I know that I could have those things together because those are the things that the Lord has called me to. However, as the years have gone by, the M matters a whole lot less, to be honest, because if I think about the reality of things, my children are well taken care of. My children gonna cash out. Whenever I pass away, my insurance policy is top tier. These kids gonna cash out. They have their own policy that they can pull from as they get older that accrues cash value. We have properties that my kids will inherit. So I may not have built a singular business that grossed 7 figures within a 12 calendar month year. But the reality is, with the ultimate goal of building wealth and generational wealth, that's still very much so established. So the M at this point is more of an ego boost and something to check off my list than anything beyond that. And that has just come with wisdom, come with maturity. And then when I go back to building in my builder phase, it'll happen by virtue of me just committing to what God has called me to, not by me focusing on the dollar amount. And so I want to have these conversations, and because there's so much that I've learned over the years. And so I'm thinking about all of this in the context of my YouTube channel and how I want to present myself. I told y'all how I believe that the Lord has called us to be thought leaders and not content creators. And so I'm always thinking from a thought leadership standpoint. That's why you always hear me speak with a lot of frameworks and concepts, not just here's what I eat in a day. Like, no, no. But so I'm thinking about my YouTube channel and I'm planning some things out. Again, I'm on my summer break, so I'm like, yeah, you know, I could record sometime throughout the summer, and then I'll start releasing the videos on this frequency. I'm using AI. I specifically use for
search-based brainstorming or planning type of things, I like to use Google Gemini because Google and YouTube are the largest search engines in the world. So I'm going to use their AI software when I'm brainstorming and coming up with strategy. So I'm using Google Gemini. I'm coming up with the plan for my YouTube channel. And my plan is beautiful. I am very excited about what I plan to do on the channel, from just the branding to the topics to how the videos will be done, releasing them at a frequency that makes sense for the time that I have to give to it. And so I had all of this organized, but then remember, I had this moment of me weeping for my father. And so I had to sit with the wisdom of what the Lord showed me as it relates to working relationship, but then pouring into the personal relationship. And I made a decision that I wasn't going to do anything with the plan. My ambition and my drive and my excitement to create in this way was there. I have this desire to pursue this plan that has been created. But that desire has to be subject to him. And so the Lord didn't give me that revelation for no reason. Now I have to be obedient. So I said, you know what, God, I'm actually going to take the summer and I'm just going to spend time with you. Once we get around August time, I'll see how I feel. And do I feel comfortable to where I have that void is now being built back up of just my personal relationship with the Lord? If so, then maybe I can go back to building. That will be a decision that has to be made in prayer and wisdom. But the right now decision is I have this desire, but I'm going to put that desire to the side because what's more important is this closeness with my father, not the working relationship. But what's more important is the personal relationship. And that's just where we're going to sit for a little bit. And so that's an example of we have these desires, but they have to be put in their rightful place, which is second to the Lord. The author goes on to say, ultimately, nothing in this life apart from God can satisfy our desires. Tragically, we continue to chase after our desires. The result, a chronic state of restlessness, or worse, angst, anger, anxiety, disillusionment, depression, all of which lead to a life of hurry, a life of busyness, overload, shopping, materialism, careerism, a life of more, which in turn makes us even more reckless and the cycle spins out of control. To make a bad problem worse, this is exacerbated by our cultural momentum of digital marketing from a society built around the twin gods of accumulation and accomplishment. Advertising is literally an attempt to monetize our restlessness. They say we see upward of 4,000 ads a day, all designed to stoke the fire of desire in our bellies. Buy this, do this, eat this, drink this, have this, watch this, be this. And in today's world, we see that through the straight up ads and then also through just this growth of content creation as well. Everything has an agenda. Everything is marketing. Everything is advertising. And everything is trying to poke at our desires and to make us restless. And restlessness leads us to the hurry and to the anxiety. He says, and when our innate human restlessness collides with the digital age, the result is a culture-wide crisis of emotional unhealth and spiritual death. He says, so is there a practice from the life and teachings of Jesus to mitigate against this chronic restlessness of our condition and culture and to tap into Jesus's rest for our souls? You already know the answer, yes. And the top of the list is the Sabbath. He says, the word Sabbath comes to us from Hebrew Shabbat. The word literally means to stop. The Sabbath is simply a day to stop. Stop working, stop wanting, stop worrying, just stop. He says, but the Sabbath is more than just a day. It's a way of being in the world. It's a spirit of restfulness that comes from abiding, from living in the Father's loving presence all week long. You could frame it like this. Here's the list A of restfulness. Margin, slowness, quiet, deep relationships, time alone, delight, enjoyment, clarity, gratitude, contentment, trust, love, joy, peace, working from love, and work as contribution. Now here's the alternative on relentlessness, busyness, hurry, noise, isolation, crowds, distraction, envy, confusion, greed, discontentment, worry, anger, melancholy or sadness, anxiety, working for love, and work as accumulation and accomplishment. He said, which list best describes you? If you resonate more with list B, again, zero guilt trip, human nature in a digital age form of foreboding alliance against a spirit of restfulness. We all struggle in this area. No wonder the writer of Hebrews, speaking of Sabbath and in its spirit of restfulness, called us to make every effort to enter that rest. Notice the irony of that comment. We are to work hard to rest well. Have you ever been in a position, this is for my busybodies, where resting is hard? I know for me, the middle, I see rest as the middle. I'm good at either being busy and getting things done, like focused, locking in, disciplined, doing what I got to do, or doing absolutely nothing. I very much so can rot in the bed, watch all the documentaries, order Uber Eats all day, straight chilling. The in-between, I believe, is where the Sabbath is. This place of rest where you're still doing things, but it's not from that hurried and that busy and that anxious place. I struggle with the middle because I'm either locked in and getting it done or I'm not doing anything at all. And so it does take work to operate from a place of rest. And so if you are that busybody like me, your mind is always moving and you find that middle ground of rest difficult, we have to work for it. Sounds crazy, as he said, but we have to work for it. We have to plan for it. I know something that worked really well for me was I used to always plan my weeks a week in advance. So I would take usually Thursday, where I'll take a second and I'll like evaluate my week and I'll think about what went well, what didn't go well, how can I improve the next week. I look at like my calendar thinking like, all right, I didn't give myself enough time to do my tasks. So I'm going to only do 3 things a day versus the 6 things a day the following week. Or as I woke up early, but that made me crash by like 3 p.m. So instead of waking up at 4, I'm going to wake up at 6 so that I could have a bit more stamina throughout the day. So I would just take a very analytical look at the week and then I would plan the following week. I always, and I do this even now, I always order groceries on Friday. I did that mostly because on the weekends, if I didn't, we'd be done ran out of food by Friday and then we're eating out all weekend. And all the money that I spent from us eating all weekend could have just gone into groceries. So I started ordering groceries on Fridays so that we can get through the weekend and then also be prepared for the upcoming week. But what that did was, even though my intent of operating this way wasn't necessarily for the Sabbath, I experienced a more restful weekend when I did that. So I'm not like worrying about what's happening next week on the weekend. My Sundays aren't a planning day. I done did that already. I did that during the week. And I already know once I clock into my business or whatever on Monday, I already know what it is that I'm doing. I have it planned out. I have it scheduled out and I'm just executing. That saves time. That saves energy, and it allowed me to be that much more efficient. So I've seen how that has worked practically, but this made me think, like, if I take it a step further and not just do this for efficiency's sake, but if I operate by honoring the Sabbath for my spiritual sake, how much more efficient can I be? And efficiency, not just from a productivity standpoint, but how much more aligned can I be? How much more precise can I be with what the Lord has for me to do? So if you're struggling, I gave those practical things, because if you struggle with practically resting, those are some things that you can do. I know for me, it was a lot easier to slow down on the weekends because I took care of a lot of things already. It's hard to rest when you got 50 million pending things going on. So whatever loops you can close in my corporate speak before the Sabbath comes, do that. And that's one of the ways that you can work to create this rest period. The author says there is a discipline to the Sabbath that is really hard for a lot of us. It takes a lot of intentionality. It won't just happen to you. It takes planning and preparation, as we just discussed. He said it takes self-control, the capacity to say no to a list of good things so that you can say yes to the best. But Sabbath is the primary discipline or practice by which we cultivate the spirit of restfulness into our lives as a whole. The Sabbath is to a spirit of restfulness what a soccer practice is to a match or a band practice is to a show. It's how we practice, how we prepare our minds and bodies for the moments that matter most. He says, built into Jesus' life rhythm was a core practice, an entire day, every week, set aside just to slow down, to stop. He goes on to say, the Sabbath was made for man. It was created, designed by God himself, and it's for us, a gift to enjoy from the creator to the creation to gratefully receive. He goes on to quote Genesis 1. He says, so the story of the Bible starts with, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. But after 6 days of hard work to get the universe up and running, we read the following. By the seventh day, God had finished work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. Then God blessed the seventh day and he made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done. Did you catch that? God rested. Yeah, I'm not really into the Sabbath. I'm an extrovert. I just like to stay busy, and God rested. Yeah, I like the Sabbath thing, but I work a demanding job that I love and I just can't make the time because God rested. Yeah, but I have two little kids at home and it's just not really doable right now. Maybe later when, and he says, do I need to say it again? God rested. And in doing so, he built a rhythm into the DNA of creation, a tempo, a syncopated beat. God worked for six, rested for one. When we fight the work 6 days, Sabbath one day rhythm, we go against the grain of the universe. This small check to our excuses of just saying God rested, I think it's something that we should remind ourselves of, as many of us may struggle with truly being able to rest, because we may have a lot of these same excuses that he said. I have kids, I have work, I have a demanding this, and insert whatever you have going on here that makes it difficult for you to rest. But God rested. Nobody is doing more than creating the entire universe. Nobody. And he rested. It seems almost silly when you put what you have to do up against him. And so I don't know if it's putting the background on your phone that says God rested. I don't know if it's setting reminders to go off in your phone every other whatever to say God rested. I don't know if it's sticky notes that you should put around your home that says God rested. Whatever reminder that you need, I think that you should really think about this week, over the next couple of days, how to make it happen. When I was reading this chapter, all I was thinking about was, man, what would the Sabbath look like? And the author gave an example of what his looks like, and I'll talk about it once we get there. But this whole time I'm thinking, like, how do I make the Sabbath a way of life? Whether it's blocking off my calendar and probably naming it something like God rested, that's probably what I'll do for that reminder. But for those of you who struggle, again, with resting, figure it out. Put it somewhere. And remember, God rested. You can too. The author says the last time a society tried to abandon the seventh-day week was during the revolution in France. They switched to a 10-day work week to up productivity. The rise of the proletarian and disaster, the economy crashed, the suicide rate skyrocketed, and the productivity, it went down. It's been proven by study after study, there is zero correlation between hurry and productivity. In fact, once you work a certain number of hours in a week, your productivity plummets. Want to know what the numbers say? 50 hours. Ironic, that's about a 6-day work week. One study found that there was a zero difference in productivity between the workers who logged 70 hours and those who logged 55. Could God be speaking to us even through our bodies? In reference to this rhythm, he says, if you fight it, fight God. Fight God, fight our own souls. Now, what does the writer of Genesis mean by rested? Was God tired? Was he burned out? As I've said, the Hebrew word Shabbat means to stop, but it can also be translated to delight. It has been this dual idea of stopping and also enjoying in God, in our lives, in his world. The Sabbath is an entire day set aside to follow God's example, to stop and delight, to delight in the world, in our lives in it, and above all, in God himself. When I read this translation, delight, it made me think about, I don't know if I've said this on a podcast or just like in private conversations, but it made me think about how my daughter taught me a lesson in how the Lord delights in us, to where it's so cute how her siblings, her brothers just love her. My oldest son told me the other day, he said, Mommy, you used to be the cutest, but since the baby, I'll call her the baby, but he said her name, since the baby been born, she's actually the cutest. And I was like, okay, dang. Excuse me. But everybody is just obsessed with her around here. When she wakes up, we all fight over who gets to take her out the crib. Whenever she comes down, everybody rushes. So whoever brings her down, everybody else rushes to go give her hugs and kisses. And she's really the princess of this house. I am interested to see the personality she developed as a result of this, all of this admiration. But she taught me a lesson about, like, man, this is how God delights in us. He loves to see us enter into his presence. He loves to just watch us grow and develop and change and draw near to him. He delights in us. And this invitation to the Sabbath is inviting us to delight in him, in all that he is doing in our lives. If we take a second to touch grass, to look around us, to feel and touch and smell and appreciate, I wonder how restorative that will be for our souls. And the author talks about it, how the Sabbath will prepare you to be able to even go through your week a lot more rested because you took the time to stop, but also delight in the Lord. I don't think we do that enough. How much more will we trust him when he gives us an instruction that's uncomfortable? How much more will we spend time in his word? How much more will we speak to him throughout the week and pray for him or pray to him and pray for people? How much better will we serve him if we took the time to truly delight in him? The author goes on to say, but notice what else God did. He blessed the seventh day and made it holy. Two things worth noting here. First, the Sabbath is blessed. In the Genesis story, three things are blessed by God. To start with, God blessed the animal kingdom with an invocation, be fruitful and multiply. Then he blessed humanity the same way, be fruitful and multiply. And then God blessed the Sabbath. Wait, so God blessed animals, humans, and then a day? What does that mean? It means, and asterisk here, I think this is what the author is saying. I'm not quite sold on this is what the actual text means, but, you know, hey. Nevertheless, he says, it means that the Sabbath, just like an animal or human being, has the life-giving capacity to procreate, to fill the world up with more life. Life is tiring. You get to the end of the week, and even if you love your job, still you're worn down on every level, emotionally, even spiritually. The Sabbath is how we fill our souls back up with life. Recently, I read a survey done by a doctor who cited the happiest people on earth. Near the top of the list was a group of Christians called Seventh-day Adventists. They are religious, literally, about the Sabbath. This doctor noted that they live 10 years longer than the average American. I did the math. If I Sabbath every 7 days, it adds up to, wait for it, 10 years over a lifetime, almost exactly. So when I say the Sabbath is life-giving, that's not empty rhetoric. If this study is to be believed, every day you Sabbath, you are statistically and scientifically likely to get back an elongated life. From now on, I'm Sabbathing 3 days a week. And not only will you live longer, even more importantly, you'll live better. So first, the Sabbath is blessed. Second, it's holy. So there is a day that is blessed and holy, a rhythm in creation, 6 and 1. And when we tap into this rhythm, we experience health and life. But when we fight this rhythm, ignore it, suppress it, push past it, bully it, make excuses, look for a way to get out of it, we reap the consequences. Consider the mind. We grow mentally lethargic, numb, uncreative, distracted, restless. Emotional unhealth becomes our new normal. Or consider the body. We get tired and worn out. Our immune systems start to falter. It's like our nervous systems are trying to get our attention. He says maybe that's why God eventually has to command the Sabbath. Does that strike you as odd? It's like commanding ice cream or live music or beach days. You would think that we'd all be chomping at the bit to practice the Sabbath, but apparently there's something about the human condition that makes us want to hurry our way through life as fast as we possibly can, to rebel against the limitations of time itself. Due to our immaturity, dysfunction, and addiction, God has to command his people to do something deeply life-giving: rest. Now, I'm going to skip ahead a bit for the sake of time, and I think we understand the importance of rest. We understand what the Sabbath is. We need to live it out, though. The author gave some lessons that he's learned from Sabbath and also some examples as to how he lives it out that I want to make sure that we touch on. And make sure you get this book. I do skip around sometimes so for the sake of time for the podcast, but make sure you get the book for yourself to fill in any gaps that I might leave here on the show. But the author goes on to say, one of the surprising things I learned when I began to practice Sabbath is that to really enjoy the seventh day, you have to slow down the other 6 days. You can't go 90 miles per hour all week, running the pedal to the floor, harrowing your soul to the bone for 6 days straight, and then expect to slam on the brakes for Sabbath and immediately feel zen and awesome. You have to find the rhythm. As we used to say when I played indie rock bands, you have to find the pocket. Now, quick side note, I'm from the DC area. The pocket isn't a go-go beat. So although he's talking about indie rock bands, but the pocket I'm talking about is on a nice bounce beat. But nevertheless, he says, because the Sabbath isn't just a 24-hour time slot in your weekly schedule, it's a spirit of restfulness that goes with you throughout your week. A way of living with ease, gratitude, appreciation, peace, and prayer. A way of working from rest, not for rest, with nothing to prove. A way of bearing fruit from abiding and not ambition. This was really good. Let me repeat this in case you missed it in my little sidetrack to the bounce beat. He says, because the Sabbath isn't just a 24-hour time slot in your weekly schedule, it's a spirit of restfulness that goes with you throughout your week. It is a way of living with ease, gratitude, appreciation, peace, and prayer, a way of working from rest, not for rest, with nothing to prove, a way of bearing fruit from abiding and not ambition. That's why the Sabbath is on day 7, not day 3 or 4. It's not a break in the week to rest up so we can get back to doing what really matters, work. It's the climax, what the entire week has been leading up to. If you aren't practicing the Sabbath, you're missing out on the best day of the week. He then goes on to describe what this looks like for his family. He says, 9 times out of 10, Sabbath is the best day of my week. No exaggeration. Every Friday night after Sabbath dinner, we bake a giant cookie in a cast iron pan, a full square foot of chocolate yumminess. Then we dump a carton of ice cream on top, let it melt a little, and eat it all straight out of the pan. It's some kind of symbolic nod to both our unity as a family and our collective love of sugar. As we indulge, we go around the table and share our highlight of the week. I feel like a broken record because I almost always say last Sabbath. Something spectacular usually has to go down to beat out the previous week's Sabbath for joy. He says to us to begin, just set aside a day, clear your schedule, turn off your phone, say a prayer, and invite the Holy Spirit to pastor you into his presence. And then rest and worship in whatever way is life-giving for your soul. He says, my family and I do this every week. Just before sunset on Friday, we finish up all our to-do lists and homework and grocery shopping and responsibilities, power down all our devices. We literally put them in a box and stow it in a closet and gather around the table as a family. We open a bottle of wine, light some candles, read a psalm, pray. Then we feast, and we basically don't stop feasting for the next 24 hours. It's the Comer way. That's his last name. And I might add the Jesus way. We sleep in Saturday morning, drink coffee, read our Bibles, talk, laugh. In the summer, we walk to the park. In the winter, we make a fire. We get lost in good novels on the couch, cuddle, we nap. He says, honestly, I spend a lot of time sitting by the window, just being. It's like a less stressful Christmas every week. And something happens about halfway through the day, something hard to put language to. It's like my soul catches up with my body, like some deep part of me that got beat up and drowned out by meetings and email and Twitter. I feel free, free from the need to do more, get more, be more, free from the spirit, the evil demonic spirit of restlessness that enslaves our society. I feel another spirit, the Holy Spirit, a restful calm settle over my whole person. And I find that my ordinary life is enough. And I find that my ordinary life is enough. And on Saturday evening, when I turn my phone back on and re-enter the modern world, I do so slowly. And that's where we'll end. This book had me thinking. I'm glad that he gave examples. I wish he would have given more examples about what the Sabbath looks like for different demographics of people. But I think this is a good opportunity for us to take this to God in prayer and ask him, Lord, what does the Sabbath look like for me? I think this is a good time for you to even sit and be self-aware. What does rest and worship look like for you? Of course, many of us have the routine of going to church, but in addition to that, what else is it? Is it sleeping in? Is it, instead of going to 8 o'clock service, going to 11 just so you can sleep in? Is it going for a walk in the park? Whatever it is for you, do it. Set aside that time. Fight for that time. Be intentional about that time. Protect that time the same way you protect the silence and solitude we talked about last episode. And watch how the Lord will restore you. I know this is going to be a topic for me in my prayer time and my quiet time this week, because this is something I would like to implement. It's not necessarily something that is commanded still once Jesus came. He didn't undo it, but it isn't necessarily a commandment that we have to do, but even still, we should. It's a best practice, if you will. So I'll go ahead and end it here. Thank you guys so much for listening to another episode of the Blessed and Bossed Up podcast. We have two more chapters, two more principles. The next one will be on simplicity. And then the last one is on slowing. So I look forward to covering those with you. Thank you guys so much for listening to another episode of the Blessed and Bossed Up podcast. Please get those products. The link is in the show notes. If you have a small group, I want to gift you those products for free. If you order more than 10, the discount is already applied. I love you guys, and I'll see you in the next one.